So, I do want to share some thoughts with you this morning, and what I want to share is about mystery. It's about big spiritual mysteries, cosmic questions that we might never be able to get answers to, and what I feel are the healthiest, most helpful attitudes to have when we encounter these big questions. So, you heard about my background, NCW degree, no credentials. Anybody else have that one? There's a club. There's a few of us. But actually, I did actually manage to escape from college with a real degree, a BS. A BS in geology. Yeah, true. I wanted to be a rock star. I was fascinated, and still am, by all the big questions that geology looks at, the big mysteries. How our planet, our sun, our solar system came to be formed out of these clouds of gas and dust. You know, there's a lot we don't know about this process. And then, you know, our solar system contains all these planets. We know how many moons there are now, and it's hundreds, and they're all different. It's like there's not a whole bunch of moons that are alike. They're all separate and unique, and we don't know why that is. We're finding that out. Our own planet, about 3.5 billion years ago, somehow out of inorganic material, we got organic material. We got life starting to form. How did that happen? We don't know. Lots of theories going on. But then over the last 3.5 billion years, out of all these quadrillion million evolutionary possibilities, at this little micro moment in geologic time, somehow we get to be the dominant species. I'm fascinated by all of this, and I continually read about it, but it wasn't long after college that I realized I was even more interested in what I think of as bigger mysteries, like God. What is God? If God is real, what is God like? What is consciousness? This incredible quality we have to reflect and plan and dream and imagine. What is death? What happens to consciousness after death? We don't know. What is free will? Is that a real thing? Is everything really connected in some fundamental level, like the mystics tell us? What is love? What are women really thinking? Big mysteries. So I thought we could have some fun today with a couple of these. And if we're going to start at the beginning, I think we should start with God, because God is really the big mystery. And the next question, if we sort of accept the idea that there is or there could be a God, the question is, well, what is God like? And I'm sure you've noticed that lots of people have tried to tell us down through the centuries. All the saints and sages and everybody's tried to tell us what God is like. What I find fascinating is that whatever God is like, my idea of what God is like has changed in my adulthood. So 30, 40 years ago, whatever I thought about God, right now it's way different. Anybody relate to that? Which is fascinating to me, because I don't think God's probably changed much in 40 years. So that felt like a song idea. So I got together with my co-writer, Richard Helm. We wrote this song called A Brief History of God. Now, you know I'm a science guy, and I like to sneak some science into the songs when I can. So in the last verse of this song, we're gonna have some physics. I had trouble with physics. When I signed up, I thought it said psychics. It wasn't what I expected. Anyway, there's a new concept. You've heard it. It's called string theory. When we get to the part of the song that's about strings, you'll know it's physics, right? So this is A Brief History of God, or G-string theory. In the beginning, there was lots of competition. Goddesses and gods of every disposition, from merciful to mean, from laid back to hyper, and little baby gods that flew around in diapers. Animals, pranksters, destroyers, creators, flute players, lute players, nymphs, and satyrs. So many gods, it was hard to keep them sorted. God had multiple personality disorder. Well, keeping track of all these gods was no fun. So finally, some people said, let's cut it down to one. But the one god was angry, always finding fault. There was banishment and floods and pillars of salt. Well, why? Was God traumatized at an early age by standing too close to the Big Bang? Was it nature or nurture or Satan's little goblins? God had anger management problems. And God had other issues that messed with serenity, like this long-term question of sexual identity. The feminine divine or the male autonomous? God was so confused. Am I androgynous? And then on top of that, what was challenging the most was trying to figure out what the heck's the Holy Ghost. And God needed time off and checked into a clinic. And poor old God was becoming schizophrenic. While in for treatment, God sent some folks to teach us, like Krishna and Buddha, Muhammad and Jesus. And on some things they agree, on other things they don't. And if you choose the wrong one, some say your soul is toast. Now everybody's praying by all these different rules. Muslims five times a day, Buddhists quite a few, Hindus, Jews, and Christians whenever there's a need, and Unitarians would rather plant a tree. Well, God's come a long way from that early dysfunction. And now science has brought us to this beautiful junction. The key to the theory is that every single thing is made up entirely of vibrating strings. And this is what musicians have known all along. The universe is really one big song. And there you have it, friends. That's the story so far. You're all just musical strings in God's big guitar. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I love that thought. I think it's a happy thought. We're always vibrating. We're constantly in vibration. We never stop. So the trick is to stay in tune. A lot of our relationships are just about staying in tune. Mystics and saints and prophets have told us, many of them, that God is love. And that's an answer we like a lot. It's a comfortable answer, because really what feels better than love? Really nothing. So we like that answer, God is love, but it's for me, the word is kind of fun to play with, because they talk about Eskimos having like 50 words for different kinds of snow. We have one word, love, for all this huge range of emotional experiences, right? I mean, just a few. Divine love, earthly love, motherly love, brotherly love, physical love, mystical love. Faded love, jaded love, unconditional love, unrequited love, puppy love, love of chocolate chip cookies, and romantic love, the big mystery for me still, romantic love. I'm fascinated by the fact that we can have so much chemistry and magnetism and attraction with one person, and then there might be a twin, a physical identical twin, and there's none whatsoever. It's just amazing to me. And sometimes love is really strong for a long time, and then it goes away. You know, it's Linda Barry, the cartoonist, said romantic love is an exploding cigar we willingly smoke. And of course, we're going to smoke that cigar, you know, because what feels better than love? Really nothing. John Bradshaw, you remember John Bradshaw? He said that falling in love, in reality, in actuality, falling in love is a high-octane endocrine hormone cocktail. Science has proven this is true. We can measure those hormonal changes that happen when we fall in love. And they're dramatic and they're profound and they stay changed for a while. But after 6 to 18 months, the hormones revert back to whatever their base level was before. So for that relationship to last longer than the hormone cocktail, it has to be based on something else, right? Something deeper, something more profound, maybe even something sacred. So I feel like we should at least do what the Greeks did. We should at least have two words for love. You know, they had eros and they had agape, romantic love and divine love, basically. So that way, if we wanted to tell somebody we loved them, but we didn't want there to be any misunderstanding about what was going to happen next, we could say, I agape you. And it's just clear, right? I really vote for that. Love is a word I use with music. I can't imagine my life without music. I love music as much as I love anything. I love this guitar. As much as I love this guitar, before I had this guitar, I loved a different guitar. It's possible to love more than one guitar. I had this beautiful Dreadnought, that's a big guitar, Dreadnought's a size and shape, and it was made out of maple, so it was a very striking blonde finish, very pretty guitar, and not a great guitar, but a very good guitar, and I had it for a long time, and I've been all over the world with it for 10, 12, 15 years, something like that, so I was very fond of this guitar. We get very attached to our instruments, but as much as I loved this guitar, I started thinking that I wanted a new guitar, a different guitar. I wanted one that was smaller, that finger-picked more easily, that had better electronics in it for plugging into sound systems, and a few other things. And the more I thought about this, the more I wanted a different guitar. And the months went by, and this desire really grew in me. I thought about it a lot, but I wasn't doing anything about it. I don't like shopping for guitars. I'm hard to please. It's hard for me to find one that fits my hands. And also because a lot of guitar stores are staffed by what we could call young rock musicians. And just tell me if in your mind these two things go together. Young rock musicians, great customer service. I mean, not always. Sometimes, but not always. Anyway, so I'm just putting it off until fate intervenes in the Honolulu airport. And I'm walking up to the gate counter with my guitar over my shoulder. It's in my soft case. We call it a gig bag. It fits overhead or it hangs in the closet. And I'm just, like I do every week, I'm walking up to the gate counter. And this woman who's like 15 feet away, she's at the gate counter, running the gate counter. And she sees me coming. And before I can even get there, she says, that is not going on the plane with you. And turns away. And I thought, wow, that's weird. That's never happened. What is going on here? So I thought about it, and I thought, you know what? She just doesn't know. She doesn't realize that I am a professional musician. She just needs to know that. So I go back up. I give her a big smile. I said, hey, you know what? I'm a professional musician. I got a concert in San Francisco. I got a... get this guitar on board with me, and I fly your airline all the time, and she interrupts me, cuts me off. She says, no, 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 you didn't hear me. That's not going on the plane with you. Walks away. So I'm thinking this is going to be harder than I thought. So finally I decide she must be worried about the load. And so I go up to her, I give her a big smile. Hey, you know what? You're probably worried about the load. How about we let everybody board? I'll get on last, and we'll see if there's room. Because I knew there'd be room. It was one of those giant planes. And she said, I've already told you twice that is not going on the plane with you. Now stop bothering me and decide what you're going to do. Well, now the plane is boarding, and I'm kind of panicking because I have to get the guitar on board. So I just resort to begging. I just go up to her and start pleading with her. Can we just talk to a flight attendant? Can we just see if there's room? And she's just a block of ice, and she says, you have two choices. You can check it, or you can leave it here, but it is not going with you. So I gave it to her. I said, well, please ask the baggage guys to be careful with it because it could get hurt so easily. I get on board. Turns out I'm in the bulkhead seat, front row of coach, and across from me is the little jump seat where the flight attendant sits. And we're taxiing for a long time, so she and I start talking. I tell her the whole story about Attila, and to her credit, she's appalled. She can't believe it. And when I'm finished, she listens to the whole thing. And when I'm finished, she says, I just want to apologize for our airline. That's crazy. That should not have happened. We're not like this. You know, we try to accommodate musical instruments. We know they're important. We know they're your career. And we're not like this. There's plenty of room on the plane. The closets are empty. It should never have happened. So please accept my apology and don't give up on us. I felt better. She got up to go to work. I thought that was the end of it. But she evidently told all the other flight attendants, because when I get up to get off the plane in San Francisco, there's seven of them all lined up there, all seven flight attendants, and they knew. I was the guy with the guitar, and I'm walking by. Oh, you're the guy with the guitar. And I said, yeah. And they said, well, look, they brought it up for you. Here it is. And I'm thinking, well, that's really nice. And then I thought, well, maybe we should look at it. We unzipped the case. And it's just in splinters. You know, it's like the baggage guys thought they were Pete Townsend at a Who concert, you know. Let's have some fun with this. So it wasn't going to be played again. And I felt bad. The flight attendants all felt bad. Three of them walked me down to baggage service. And they said, look, here's what happened. Here's our employee numbers, phone numbers, our names. We think you should make it right because this is wrong. And then they had to leave because it was midnight. So I'm in the bowels of the San Francisco airport, and it's midnight, and there's nobody around anywhere except this girl across the counter who looks about 12. And she looks up at me with this really sweet face, and she says, I can't help you. I'm only 18. I work here, but I don't have authority to do anything. Now, if you want to come back in the morning at 9 o'clock, the manager will be here, and you can talk to her. But if you want to come back, you need to know that we have a company policy. It's really strict. We never break it. We don't compensate for musical instruments. We just don't do it. So I left, go to where I'm spending the night in San Francisco with some musician friends. And you know how when you're upset, it's hard to sleep sometimes? And my feelings for Attila were not something I could share with you outside of group therapy. So I didn't really sleep. And I got up in the morning exhausted, angry, feeling horrible, driving back out to the airport. And I felt so bad, I just started praying. And I just said, God, you know what? I don't really care what happens to this. I just would really love to be calm. That's it. Please just help me be calm. And it worked. By the time I got to the airport, I'd sort of let go of everything, and I was calm. I felt okay. The manager was there. I showed her the names and numbers of everybody. I told her the whole story. She just shook her head and disappeared, came back with another hire manager. They sat down. They said, you know, we have a policy we don't compensate for musical instruments. And I said, yeah, I know. I heard that. And they said, well, we've talked it over, and we think we need to buy you a new guitar. I said, really? And they said, yeah, just find one you like. We'll pay for it. So I got out of there before they could say anything else. I asked my musician friends in San Francisco, where do I go? I need to go get a guitar. And they said, well, our favorite place is the Haight-Ashbury Music Center. Okay, off I go to Haight-Ashbury. And, you know, this is about 20 years ago, and I'm from Kansas. I don't know what it's like now, but back then it was like the Twilight Zone. I mean, it was amazing because you could see every kind of personal preference right on the sidewalk. It was like a smorgasbord for the senses. And you know, I'm walking around looking for this guitar store, getting a little high in the process. And finally, I find it. And it turns out to be the best guitar store I've been in. Great guitars, great salespeople. For 2 days, they bring me guitars, let me play them, answer my questions. Don't hover, don't pressure, just really nice. And finally, they brought me the guitar I really liked, and it felt good in my hand, and I played it the rest of the day, and then they let me take it out of the store and do a concert that night. Pretty nice, you know? So that's when I knew this was my new guitar. Well, this guitar is way better than my old guitar. It's way more fun to play. It's got a lot of features that I like. It's $600 more expensive than my old guitar. Totally paid for by the airline. And the thing is, I owe it all to Attila, the gate agent. You never know who's going to turn out to be an angel in your life. They might not look like it at first. But when we look back at these, and I know this has happened to everybody here, we look back at these events and we kind of can make some connections. We think, okay, maybe that's why this happened. It fills me with a sense of wonder that maybe we're all connected in ways we can't possibly understand. You know, if the scientists are right, if the physicists are right about string theory, and we're all at our most fundamental basic level just vibrating strings, we're just everything, not just us, everything, even the air vibrating strings, then we're all in this cosmic symphony of vibration together. That's what we're part of. Or if the mystics are right, if God is everything and everything is God, then wouldn't we be connected on that fundamental level too? And why is this important? Well, connection, which is one of your core values, by the way, is important because when we feel connected, it's much easier to feel compassion. That's a big deal. What I said about wonder is kind of the key thing I want you to take from this. Wonder is a really important emotion. Awe and wonder. And what the best mystics and the best scientists have in common is a sense of awe at the workings of the universe. A sense of wonder at how it all works. What the best of those have in common is a sense of humor. The ability to take it lightly. There are a lot of funny mystics. There are some funny scientists. Einstein said that, you know, once you can accept the universe as something coming from nothing, manifesting into something, wearing stripes with plaid is easy. So a sense of humor and a sense of wonder are the two ways that I like to cope with these big questions, these big mysteries. I feel like it kind of puts everything in perspective and helps me have a manageable way to live with anything I can't understand. So I want to suggest that you think about that. Now, humor, we all know the health benefits of humor. It's been well documented for decades, even centuries. Wonder is a new thing. There are lots of science studies going on right now about the benefits of experiencing awe and wonder. And if you want to sign up, leave me your email address. I will be happy to send you some links that you can read about how important it is, how beneficial it is to experience that feeling of awe, right? So finally, these mysteries, these big mysteries, and getting comfortable with them, there's a German theologian who said something cool, Karl Rahner. He said, there's two kinds of people in the world, people who need certainty and people who seek understanding. And I would just suggest that it's better to be a seeker of understanding for this reason. When you're sure you're right, you're stuck with what you already know. That makes sense? When you're sure you're right, learning stops. Okay, well, there's a lot of mysteries we didn't cover, but we're going to get to them at 2 o'clock, I promise you. Free will, consciousness, everything. Death, women, we're going to get to all of them. And I also wrote a new song for you all for today. I finished it last night on the BART train, so we'll do that this afternoon. Anyway, right now I'd love to take all these thoughts into meditation. And to get into meditation, we're going to do something I like to do. We did it here 5 years ago, and that is sing Heart of the Mother together, which is a two-part chant. Now, for those of you who don't know this chant, it's very simple. There's a high part. Usually the ladies do that. There's a lower part. Usually the men do that. You can do either part. Doesn't matter. But that's just kind of how the voices are arranged. So the high part, well, just do the low part first. Four lines. Almost identical. Now, we don't have it up here because I don't want you to read it. I want you to sing it. And it's real easy to remember. I am one with the heart of the mother. I am one with the heart of love. I am one with the heart of the father. I am one with God. So it's mother, love, father, God. And this is how it sings. Let me capo up here and we'll do it. And if you know it, you can just help me teach it to everybody else. Well, it's almost in tune. It's very close. I am one with the heart of the mother. I am one with the heart of love. I am one with the heart of the Father. I am one with God. Okay, let's all try that. I am one with the heart of the Mother. I am one with the heart of love. I am one with the heart of the Father. I am one with God. Okay, a little louder, come on. I am one with the heart of the mother. I am one with the heart of love. I am one with the heart of the father. I am one with God. Okay, great. There's just a couple of you who I will say that this is actually easier with your mouth open. So don't be afraid to sing. It's not about you singing. It's about making a sound that we're all going to make together. And if you make the sound, if you help make the sound, you get the benefits. All right, so that's the low part. We have a higher part, usually for the female voice or a male tenor. And it's very simple. It's just Ave Maria, Kyrie eleison. That's Greek for Lord have mercy. Kyrie eleison. If you can't remember that, just sing carry a laser with an accent, and you'll be very close, okay? And Lisa and Danae are going to help me teach this to you. Ave Maria, Kyrie eleison. Ave That's going to work. So just decide which part you'd like to do. We're going to start with the low part and just lock that in, get it going. And then after one time, we'll bring in the Aves. And we'll just do this a few times, just three or four times, and then we'll kind of get quiet with it. And then we'll go into meditation. Just a short meditation, a couple minutes of silence. And then we'll come back with our chant after meditation and see what happens. So I invite you to just relax, take a big breath, get comfortable, and just surrender. surrender yourself to this and see what happens. See where it goes. See where it takes you. So, low part singers, men, most of you, I am one with the heart of the Mother, Love, Father, God, in that order. Here we go. I am one with the heart of the Mother. I am one with the heart of love. I am one with the heart of the Father. I am one with God. Keep it going, low part. Aves. I am one with the heart of the Mother. I am one with the heart of love. I am one with the heart of the Father. I am one with God. Good, same thing. I am one. Softer. I am one with the heart of the Mother. I am one with the heart of love. I am one with the heart of the Father. I am one with God. Very softly. I am one with the heart of the Mother. I am one with the heart of love. Just silently. Do not pray for easy lives. Pray to be stronger, men and women. Do not pray for tasks equal to your powers. Pray for powers equal to your tasks. Then the doing of your work shall be no miracle, but you shall be a miracle. And rejoice in the life that is given to you by the grace of God. Let's all get ready to hum our parts together. together. Sing softly, I am one with the heart of the mother. I am one with the heart of love. I am one with the heart of the Father. I am one with God. Okay, a little louder. I am one with the heart of the mother. I am one with the heart of love. I am one with the heart of the Father. I am one with God. Okay, full voice now. Same thing. I am one with the heart of the mother. I am one with the heart of love. I am one with the heart of the Father. I am one with God. One more time, full voice. I am one with the heart of the mother. Okay, brilliant. Just breathe that in. Just let it fill you and bask in that feeling of spirit, present, sacred. You know, German science has shown that when we sing together like that for a few minutes, we actually line our brainwaves up in a way that's kind of significant. And they stay aligned for at least a few minutes. So while we're here in alignment, connected, I think it'd be good to pause, and this is where we could share our tithes and offerings, you know, from this place of being connected. So I'll come back in a minute with another song and finish up. Thank you for singing. That was terrific.
Ah, well, I'm not quite in my body yet. Thank you, Greg, for an amazing experience. I think we all went to a very deep, heartfelt place. It's beautiful.
And before we get to our offering, let's talk about our prayer chaplains who are available after this service to provide personal prayer support. If you're a prayer chaplain serving today, please stand. Our prayer chaplains wear the lavender stoles.
Whether you have a joy or a concern in your heart today, praying with our prayer chaplains is a powerful opportunity to have your intentions raised up in consciousness.
And now let's open our hearts to the practice of giving. I invite you to prepare your gifts as we align with the universal law of circulation. As we give, we shall receive. In truth, there is no lack or limitation. Abundance is our true nature.
For your convenience, there are a variety of ways to financially give to this community. Shown on the screen in front of you, there they are. For those of you watching online, there's a donate button on the Watch Live page. We encourage everyone to set up regular and automatic giving to Unity using your bank's free bill pay service.
I invite you to take your tithe or offering in your hand and repeat our affirmation together. Divine love,
one with me. Blesses and multiplies all that I am, all that I have, all that I give, and all that I receive. I am joy-filled and grateful.
Okay, well, just to finish up with some of these thoughts, I talked about needing certainty. Anybody here besides me ever have the disease of having to be right? I felt like I needed to deal with that through a song. So here we go. This is called My Ride Home from Neptune. My ship had crash-landed on Neptune. I was stranded for 25 years. I was sad and alone. I was chilled to the bone. Sometimes I cried a few tears. I'd given up all hope of rescue. Till one day from out of the sky, the ship came and landed on my lonely planet. And inside it, there was this guy. He opened the door of his spacecraft, smiled right at me, and he waved. And I said, hallelujah. And he said, howdy do ya. And then he said, friend, are you saved? I said, I thought that's what you're doing. Said, no, friend, I don't mean a ride. I mean saved by the Lord. And as I jumped on board, I said, sorry, I'm a new age kind of guy. Well, he gave me a lift back to Kansas. That trip made Neptune seem like a vacation. 'Cause all the way home, he was saving my soul till I was moved to retaliation. I said, you know, I once felt as you do. And the shock made his eyes open wide. And he asked, well, when was that? And I said, oh, it was a while back. In fact, it was in a past life. And when I died in that life and found heaven, I learned that everybody gets in. There were Buddhist and Muslim and Hindu followers. There were even astrologers. And then we all came back to Earth and had to live again. And then I said, you're all wrong on the Bible, too. 'Cause you take it too literally. It's a beautiful story, but it's allegory. And Jesus was like you and me. Well, that really ticked him off badly. And we argued so loud and so long. For the rest of the trip, we were flapping our lips, proving the other one wrong. Till about 1 week out from old Earth base, we were both too exhausted to care. There were 3 days of silence, fortunately no violence. And then he said, is there anything we share? Well, I looked at him with new respect then. I said the one thing that I could think of. Said between you and me, maybe we could agree that what God's all about is love. Well, he sat there a while without speaking. Then he said, yes, Jesus told us that's true. So we just talked about love. He even gave me a hug. And we sang an old spiritual or two. Well, we got back to Earth. We were famous. 'Cause they'd never seen such a sight. We did all the talk shows and wound up on Jerry Springer. We were cool, but the audience had a fight. Well, the moral of this story is simple. If you think someone else is all wrong, just imagine you're stranded on some lonely planet, and one day your opposite comes along. Thank you.